Broccoli Tree Murder, Odell Park. It was an absolutely wonderful, crystal clear day, with not a cloud in the sky. You know, one of those days where nothing could go wrong, and even if it did, it wouldn't matter. On a day like this, everything seemed conquerable, and any problem could be solved, or so it seemed. Declan was heading to Odell Park for the morning. With such clear skies, why stay indoors? He had just entered the main entrance on foot. Declan was environmentally conscious, meaning he preferred to walk or take public transit whenever he needed to go anywhere in the city. But today, with the weather being so perfect for a walk, he didn't mind covering the 2 kilometer distance on foot. As he leisurely walked through the parking lot, the tranquility of the day was suddenly interrupted by the blaring lights of police sirens speeding down the road in front of the park, heading north. Curious about the source of the commotion, he briefly pondered investigating but decided to prioritize enjoying the beautiful day instead. With a sense of relaxation washing over him, he noticed a group of individuals gathered on the ridge to the right, near the iconic broccoli tree. Declan proceeded across the parking lot, fully attuned to his surroundings. His heightened senses absorbed every detail, from the sights and sounds to the scents in the air, as he prepared to immerse himself in the present moment. In that instant, he entered a state of complete focus and awareness, ready to savor the experience to its fullest. He was in the zone. He ascended to the crest of the ridge and beheld a gathering crowd in the center of the field. Peering through the densely packed crowd, he noticed a figure being gently covered, a sight that smothered the brightness of the once sunny day. Halting in his steps, he meticulously surveyed the surroundings, searching and mentally mapping out the layout of the area, and noted the following. The body looked to be in the middle of the field in front of the broccoli tree. The grass had been recently mowed, perhaps 2 days ago. The time was around 08:14 a.m. There was only about 20 people that he could see in the park. One person wasn't running over to the crowd, but rather standing in the darkness of the large row of trees. It looked like he was just enjoying the moment, watching the crowd run around taking photos and selfies for TikTok or some other social media platform. A murder of crows had gathered on the broccoli tree, a captivating scene with their synchronized, high-pitched caws filling the air. He could smell lavender in the air. He could see a reflection on a small piece of metal in the grass over by the broccoli tree. The sounds of the police sirens now on their way back. Declan made his way to look at the reflecting metal in the grass by the broccoli tree. It seemed to be calling him. He knew the police would soon arrive at the scene, drawn by the same incident that had captured his attention. Time was of the essence. He needed to examine the object before it was disturbed by the gathering crowd or the police. Once he arrived, he immediately noticed it was a clean, shiny knife with a small amount of blood on the very tip. The knife appeared to be about 8 inches long and in remarkable condition. He spent a couple of seconds scanning the area around the knife, looking for anything that could give him a clue to why the knife was there and not near the body. Was it the murder weapon? Or was it even a murder? All Declan knew was that there was a victim and he had stumbled on a knife in the grass. The knife resembled a Gerber Mark II combat knife and was a monster of a weapon. It had a fixed double serrated blade edge, specifically designed for combat. Declan remembered that his grandfather has one and had used it during his missions in Rwanda, Sierra Leone, Africa, and Afghanistan. It was a beast of a knife, lightweight and held an edge. The one very cool thing about the Gerber knives is that they all have serial numbers. On this knife, the serial number read E6851S. The BA6 knives, known as the Mark II. The BA6 knives were created in the mid-1985 to late 1998 with the serial number range of D2349S, N4082S. This knife serial number was an E6851S. By examining the serial number and the range of years associated with that particular design, one can deduce that this knife was most likely manufactured in 1986. During the 1980s, amidst the height of the Cold War, this particular style of knife gained significant popularity, particularly among the deployed military personnel in West Germany. Declan looked up to where the figure was in the shadows of the row of trees. He or she was now gone. He swiftly made his way over there to see if he could find any clues that could help identify the person. He had almost reached the spot when he heard someone from behind him scream that he had found the knife. Unfortunately, he had picked it up and was examining it, removing any old fingerprints and replacing them with his own. Not a very smart thing to do. Just then, a convoy of police cars pulled up into the parking lot, and the local police officers swiftly exited their vehicles. One of them, Corporal Woods, began barking orders to secure the park area, ensuring that no one could leave without being checked and logged in as being on site. Despite recognizing his old friend, Declan knew he still needed to investigate the location where the mysterious figure had been standing before the police took control of the site. What he discovered was fresh boot prints in the mud beside the tree, resembling a size 8 woman's shoe, with a distinct cut on the sole and heavily worn tread. The prints seemed to belong to an old boot, making it easily recognizable due to the unique cut. Declan quickly retrieved his phone and captured multiple images of the boot prints. If he could locate the owner, he might be able to uncover crucial information leading to either the murderer or a potential witness, and Declan knew just where to look. As Declan began walking down to meet up with Corporal Woods, he noticed a silver ring lying in the grass. He quickly took several photographs of it with his cell phone. Upon closer inspection, he noticed that there was a name engraved inside the ring, which appeared to be a man's size 10 or 11. The top of the ring featured a design with something in the center, flanked by two curled wings and a star above the center. It looked military, but not from the Canadian military. The name engraved inside read M.W.O. Clarkson G. Unsure if this was related to the murder, he decided it was important to report it to Corporal Woods. He noted that the ring was approximately 50 meters from the murder scene and only 3 meters from the boot prints. It was strange. If the ring belonged to the murderer, why was it found here? Declan made his way across the parking lot towards Corporal Woods, who was now gesturing for him to come over. As Declan reached Corporal Woods, he noticed that the officer was clearly not in a good mood. With a smile, Declan asked in a cheeky voice, "What took you so long?" Corporal Woods, unimpressed, immediately replied, "It seems someone called in the murder and told 911 it was at the Botanic Gardens. Great way to start the day." Declan glanced towards the crime scene and remarked, "Well, it could be worse." Corporal Woods looked in the same direction and nodded. "Yes. Yes. It could be." He then looked down at the ground before looking up and locking eyes with Declan. "But before this goes any further, what are you doing in the park?" he asked, pointing at Declan. "You're not planning on investigating this alleged murder, are you?" Corporal Woods smiled. Declan looked towards the scene and said, "No. Not at first, but now, I feel something is drawing me in." Declan cracked a smile. Declan proceeded to brief Corporal Woods on everything he had gathered to date, including details about the ring's location and the boot prints found in the mud. He did not want to jeopardize the professional relationship they had built over the last few months. He knew that he would require Corporal Woods' support for his upcoming plans in order to be successful. Declan walked Corporal Woods around the site now that the area was cordoned off and an en route established. This was done to ensure that any evidence was not destroyed. Declan remembered his grandfather used to talk about the procedures he did when investigating terrorist attacks in Afghanistan during the war. It all made sense now, he thought to himself. Declan looked over to Corporal Woods with a grin. You may consider moving your cordon out past those trees over there, as he pointed to the clump of trees to the left of the crime scene. That's where I found the ring and boot prints. Corporal Woods barked out several orders and the cordon tape started to move thanks to his support staff. Declan said with determination, "Now nothing should be missed. That's if there is more evidence to be found." Once Declan was finished briefing Corporal Woods, Declan asked in an inquisitive voice, "If there is nothing else, can I ask for your help? I have a plan to find the owner of the boot prints that I found by the tree." Corporal Woods replied with a stern but puzzling look, "Yes, but not till I am finished in the park." With that, Declan walked over to the cordon tape, lifted it with his right hand, went underneath the tape and found a bench a few meters away to sit and review his notes, at least until Corporal Woods was ready to go. A couple of hours passed until Corporal Woods was finished clearing the area and supervising the removal of the body from the crime scene. As his team packed up and started to removing the crime scene tape, he made his way over to where Declan was sitting. Declan noticed that Corporal Woods looked stressed out. Declan stood up and walked out to meet Corporal Woods halfway across the field. Declan, recognizing the familiar signs of stress, looked directly in his eyes and asked, "Corporal Woods, are you okay? You look a little, well, stressed?" Corporal Woods looked up and said, "It's been a long day so far. Going to the wrong crime scene, which was not our fault, to having to deal with a possible murder investigation. I can think of better ways to spend my day." Declan smiled and said, "Perhaps I can help you with that. But first, we have to stop by the homeless encampment by the town square." Corporal Woods asked, "Why?" Declan replied, "I have a gift for a friend, and I have a hunch that I need to check out." With that, they packed up and headed downtown, Declan having to sit in the back of the police car. It made him feel a little uncomfortable, to say the least, since the doors only opened from the outside, along with a metal screen between him and Corporal Woods. He started to feel a little claustrophobic in the back seat. Corporal Woods looked over his right shoulder and asked, "Who is this friend you need to talk to?" Declan replied, "Just an old friend that has been going through some hard times. I have a lead on a possible apartment downtown that is coming available." Thinking to himself that these days most of the tented camps were just people looking for a place to live. They had good-paying jobs. It's just that apartments were far and few in between. Once they arrived at the tented camp and were standing outside the police car, Declan looked over and asked Woods, "If you don't mind, I would like to take a little time walking through the camp. It will only take a minute." Woods looked over with a grin and sarcastically said, "Sure, I have all the time in the world." They started to follow the obvious path into the tented area. Woods noticed Declan was intently scanning the path as if he was looking for something, and he wondered to himself what was it he was looking for. Declan, without taking his eyes off the path, "What was the name on the ring we found?" "You know the one over by the trees." "Clarkson," replied Woods. Declan smiled. "Yes, Woods." At that moment, he stopped and bent down, looking at the tracks in the mud in front of a small blue tent. He then knocked on the tent frame. "Mrs. Clarkson, are you home?" The tent flap opened up and a woman stuck her head out and answered,
"No one calls me that anymore."
She quickly stopped when she saw Corporal Woods in his police uniform. Declan asked with a friendly smile, "Would you please come out here for a couple of seconds? I would like to talk to you." She stepped out of the tent wearing jeans and a dark blue shirt, looking a little nervous, and was avoiding direct eye contact, but looking directly at the ground. Declan inquired, "What do you mean you don't go by that name anymore?" He noticed she was no longer wearing a wedding ring. Her voice was much softer, almost as if she just came down with laryngitis.
"I divorced Gary Clarkson several years ago."
"Do you now use your maiden name?" asked Corporal Woods in a direct, official-sounding voice.
Yes,
she answered hesitantly. Well, what is it? Asked Corporal Woods.
Gibson. Kim Gibson,
she answered. Declan was very eager to understand why she had been in the park that morning, and more importantly, why she had vanished so quickly upon hearing the police sirens. I know you were in the park. I saw you beside the tall grove of trees. She looked up shocked and said,
Yes, I was out for a morning walk and heard the commotion.
Declan thought to himself, Interesting. She doesn't know about the ring being found. Just then, Corporal Wood's phone rang with a thundering ringtone that filled the air. It was the Darth Vader's theme from the early Star Trek movies. Dum-dum-dum, dum-ti-dum, dum-ti-dum. Declan couldn't help but chuckle. Corporal Woods, looking slightly embarrassed, admitted, So, I am a fan, he said before stepping away from the tent to ensure Kim Gibson couldn't overhear the conversation. The phone call was from his partner, and Declan strained to catch parts of the conversation. Woods, we've identified the victim. It's a man named Tom Gibson. We both spun around and sprinted back to the tent, knocked on the tent frame, and with a stern, loud voice shouted, Ms. Gibson! There was no answer, so Declan ripped open the door flaps and looked into the tent to see that the back of the tent was cut open and Kim Gibson was gone. Declan began to consider the idea that Kim Gibson might be protecting her ex-husband, M.W.O. Clarkson. However, he couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to the situation. Was he overlooking something? What was it that bothered him so much? Corporal Woods frantically began a search of the camp, but quickly realized that he was going to need some help. With that, he called in for additional support to track down Kim Gibson for further questioning. Declan knew that Kim Gibson had a part to play in the murder. He just wasn't sure which part she was playing. Over the next 24 hours, several things happened with the police. First, they detained MWO Gary Clarkson and would spend several hours questioning him. A couple of interesting points were noted. 2 days after losing Kim Gibson at the tented camp, Declan received a request from Corporal Woods to meet for coffee at the downtown office. Uncertain about the purpose of the meeting, Declan was intrigued by the invitation. Walking into Woods' office felt like stepping into an administrator's nightmare, with paper scattered haphazardly across the retro furniture that seemed out of place. The office resembled a set from a 1950s movie, and Declan couldn't help but imagine half-eaten sandwiches hidden among the piles of papers, possibly days or even weeks old. Corporal Woods welcomed Declan into his office with an awkward smile. Declan, good to see you made it. Please, have a seat. He gestured towards a chair partially covered with papers in front of a cluttered desk. Declan picked up the papers off the chair and placed them on the floor, then sat down. Corporal Woods, still smiling, offered, Coffee? Declan politely declined. No thanks, he then noticing a piece of paper in Corporal Woods' hand. Corporal Woods persisted, shaking the paper. Coffee, Declan replied. Sure, okay. Corporal Woods placed the paper on the desk in front of Declan and said cheerfully, I'll be just a couple of minutes, before exiting the room and closing the door behind him. As Declan glanced down at the desk, he realized the papers in front of him was the unofficial notes from Gary Clarkson's interview. It dawned on Declan that's what this meeting was all about, allowing him to see the notes before being put into official records. It looked like just a standard sheet of paper with the title, Interviewer Notes, Constable Davies, followed by the date and timestamp. It looked like there was only a few questions that were answered before the interview was halted. Interviewer notes. Interviewer. Constable Davies date. Time. 28 May, 2024. 0935 HRs. Interviewee. Gary Clarkson room. Question. What were you doing in the park? Answer. I was just out for a morning walk. Question. Did you kill Tom Gibson? Answer, No, of course not, but that guy is an idiot. Question: What do you mean? Answer: He is always looking for money, free handouts, always looking to pay off bookies or bad deals gone south. He is a pain in the ass, if you ask me. Question: Do you know why your ex-wife was there? Answer: No. But I suspect to give Tom more money. Noted, he hesitated. Question: Was that your knife we found at the crime scene? Answer: No. Noted. He hesitated and seemed very confused. Question: Will we find your fingerprints on the knife? Answer: No. It's not my knife. Again, very unsure of his answer. Question: Has your ex-wife, Kim, talked to you in the past 24 hours? Answer: Yes, just for a few minutes. Why? Question: We just wanted to make sure your family knows you're here. Answer: Okay. Thanks. Question: Is she still living in town or is she staying with friends in town? Answer: Friends, I think. Question: Did you and Tom fight? At this point in the interview, Gary Clarkson refused to answer any more questions without having his lawyer present. Declan noted two compelling details. Firstly, and most significantly, Gary Clarkson had been in contact with his ex-wife after she had escaped from the police. Secondly, Gary never mentioned anything about his missing ring. This could mean that he either doesn't remember where he lost it, or he instructed Kim to retrieve it from the crime scene before the police could find it. Just then, Corporal Woods walked into the office, carrying two steaming cups of coffee. "Here you go," Woods said, placing one of the cups on the desk in front of Declan. "Thanks," Declan replied with a nod. He then added, "I think I know how we can find Kim Gibson." Corporal Woods looked at Declan with an inquisitive expression. "Do tell." Declan smiled. "Let's go for a walk in the park. You might want to bring along a couple of extra constables, perhaps Constable Davies," indicating that he had read the interview notes Woods had left on the desk. With a smile, Corporal Woods lifted his cup to savor the sweet taste of his morning coffee. Just then, Declan stood up, grinning. "No time for that, Corporal. Crime won't wait for coffee, and we need to get to the park." Declan, Corporal Woods, and several constables swiftly boarded one of the department's administrative vans and headed to the park. They chose the van to avoid alerting Kim Gibson to their presence upon her arrival. Once there, they quickly established a large cordon around the crime scene, ensuring they remained out of sight. Declan took a seat on a park bench near the trees, blending in as much as he could close to where the ring was found, and waited for Kim to appear. That's if his hunch was correct. The trap was sprung as a figure in a light brown hoodie, decorated with blue stars on the sleeves, approached the spot where Gary Clarkson's ring had been found. With deliberate movements, she began to kick at the grass, her intentions unmistakable. Sensing the moment, Declan signaled for the others to move in, ensuring that Kim Gibson would have no chance of escaping this time. As the constables closed in, Kim noticed one of them and turned to flee, only to find another constable blocking her path. Declan stood up and advanced towards her. "Nowhere to go this time, Kim," he declared. Kim's shoulders sagged in acknowledgement as she glanced at Declan. Suddenly, she turned and sprinted in the opposite direction, only to collide directly into Corporal Woods that was now standing directly behind her. Corporal Woods handcuffed her and handed her over to Constable Davies. "Davies, keep a close eye on this one. She likes to run," he warned her. "Not an issue. She's going nowhere but downtown," Davies replied with a confident smile. She then began escorting Kim Gibson to the waiting police car that had just arrived in the parking lot. Corporal Woods looked over to Declan with a confused face. "There is still the issue of motive. Why did Gary Clarkson kill Tom Gibson?" Declan smiled confidently and inquired, "Did he?" With that, they began their descent down the hill towards the van waiting for them. Corporal Woods promptly responded, "Regardless, it's going to take a few days to sort through all of this."
Declan's next step was to thoroughly review the three police reports: the coroner's report, Kim's first interview, and Gary's second interview. With each detail he uncovered, he felt himself getting closer to unraveling the mystery of the murder. It was only a matter of time before he pieced everything together.
Interim coroner's report, City Coroner, Acting, Davy Johns, dated 26 May, 2024, summary. On the 23rd May at 8:05 a.m., a 911 call was received reporting an alleged stabbing in Odell Park, specifically in the open field in front of the well-known broccoli tree. We arrived on the scene at 8:20 a.m. after a brief detour caused by an incorrect address initially provided. Upon arrival, the area was secured and suspected evidence was tagged and preserved to ensure a proper chain of custody. The victim was documented and transported from the site for further investigation. A summary of details are listed below. The full report will be available within the next 30 days. Paragraph 1. Victim Identification. Tom G. Gibson of Fredericton, NB. Paragraph 2. The body was found in good condition, with no contusions or lacerations. However, there was one large wound in the upper right quadrant of his chest, caused by a large sharp knife with a serrated blade edge. Cause of death was chest trauma to include puncture wound, causing instantaneous death. Paragraph 3. All of Tom G. Gibson's personal belongings have been returned either to his family or to the police, as required by the investigating officer. Paragraph 4. To comply with the newly implemented stringent protocols and to maintain the integrity of the evidence chain in custody, all supplementary information will be retained by the investigating authorities. Interviewer notes. Interviewer, Corporal Woods. Date, time, 30, May 2024, 10:35 a.m. Interviewee, Kim Gibson, first interview, with her lawyer present. Room 231. Question. When did you and Tom Gibson part ways? Answers. It would have been at least 10 years ago. Question. Remind me, why were you at the park that morning? Answers. Just out for a walk. Question. When was the last time you talked to Gary Clarkson? Answers. Yesterday, around 4 p.m. Why? Question. The morning of the murder, did you meet up with Gary Clarkson at the park? Answers. Yes. Early in the morning, he seemed upset about something. He said he was going to sort out Tom once and for all. Question. What do you mean, once and for all? Answer. He was extremely upset with Tom, over something, not sure what. Question. Did you witness the murder? Lawyer. Don't answer that. And this meeting is over. I need some time to talk to my client. Interviewer notes. Interviewer. Constable Davies, date, time, 30, May 2024, 09:35 a.m., interviewee, Gary Clarkson, second interview with his lawyer present, room 234, question, state your name please, answer, MWO Gary Clarkson, question, what does MWO mean, answer, it's a military term, an abbreviation for Master Warrant Officer, you know, Sergeant Major. Question. So you have been in the military for a while? Answer. For about 30 years now. Question. You would have spent some time in Germany during the Cold War? Answer. No. Question. So you never made it over there? Answer. Not during the Cold War. That was before my time. Question. Do you not have French commando training? Answer. Yes. I completed the course 15 years ago. All of this information is in my military record, which I would imagine you have access to. I am also qualified airborne and have my jump wings from Germany, France, Canada, and the U.S. On top of all that, I am also EOD qualified in 3 countries, among other qualifications. I've been in the Army for a few years. Question: why were you in the park on the 27th? Answer: like I said last time, I was going for a morning walk. Question: so we have Kim Gibson in for questioning, and you will never guess what she said. She said you have a very jealous nature and prone to violence. Lawyer: don't answer that. Question: again, was that your knife that was found in the park? Lawyer: don't answer that. And with that, this interview is over. Conclusion: the Broccoli Tree Murder. It had been a week since Declan last spoke with Corporal Woods in the park. During that time, he had managed to obtain a copy of the unofficial interview notes for both Gary Clarkson and Kim Gibson from Corporal Woods. These notes contained just enough information for Declan to piece together what had truly transpired. While the police were still scrambling for leads and trying to uncover the true motive behind Tom Gibson's demise, Declan had already figured out exactly who was responsible for Tom's death. All he needed to do now was get that one to confess to the murder. With that, Declan pulled out his cell phone and gave Corporal Woods a call. "Hi, this is Declan. How is your day going? Moreover, how is the case going?" Woods answered with a sharp voice, "Fine. And going nowhere. We have both of them coming in today for another interview. But I am not expecting much." Which Declan replied, "Perhaps I can help you with that." Declan arrived at the city's police headquarters downtown at 2 p.m., clutching his notes tightly. He couldn't help but think to himself, "This is going to be interesting," as he recognized the slim chance of success. His plan was risky, but workable. Declan was greeted at the front entrance by Corporal Woods. "So, what do you have for me today?" Corporal Woods chuckled. Declan smiled and replied, "The answer you've been looking for, I hope." With that, Corporal Woods gestured for Declan to enter the building. They walked down a long hallway with office doors left and right of the main hallway. Corporal Woods paused at one of the open doors and turned to Declan. "Let's grab a coffee and you can fill me in on the details of your plan that will solve all of my problems." He chuckled. Over the next 20 minutes, they delved into the simple but risky plan to uncover the Broccoli Tree murderer. Kim Gibson and Gary Clarkson arrived at the police station and underwent a brief credentials check before being escorted to the waiting room. After a couple of minutes, Kim Gibson was led to room number 222 on the left side of the hallway by Constable Davies. Kim was purposely placed sitting facing the open door behind a plain wooden desk, with Constable Davies facing her with the room's door wide open behind him. This would allow anyone walking past the door to see in. Constable Davies had received a folded piece of paper containing a series of jokes from Declan a couple minutes before. He was instructed to start reading them 2 minutes after having arrived in room 222. 2 minutes passed and Constable Davies smiled and said, "Just to lighten the mood up before we begin, I have a few jokes my kids gave me this morning. They were trying to brighten my day." She laughed as she unfolded the paper he just received from Declan, which read, "Read the following jokes 2 minutes after arriving in room 222. Make sure the door is open all the way. Joke number 1, why do crows sit on phone lines? To make long-distance calls. Joke number 2, what do you call crows that sit close together? Velcros. Joke number 3, why did the hipster burn his mouth on his coffee? He drank it before it was cool. Joke number 4. Why did the frog take a bus to work? His truck was towed away. Joke number 5. Why did the yogurt go to the art exhibition? Because it was cultured. Joke number 6. What do you call a group of chickens dressed up like crows? A murder most foul. After 2 minutes, Corporal Woods started escorting Gary Clarkson to room 227 on the right side of the hallway, ensuring Gary would see the open door and hear the laughter emanating from room 222. Corporal Woods smiled. "They're having a good time," he said with a chuckle. They continued walking down the hallway until they reached room 227. Corporal Woods pointed into the room that had a wooden chair behind a cheap but functional wooden desk. "Have a seat, Gary. Make yourself comfortable. This should only take a couple of minutes. I just need to confirm a few points." Gary sat down and was now noticeably showing signs of stress. Corporal Woods spent a couple of minutes laying out his paperwork on the desk in a small plastic evidence bag with a paper tag labeled as Gary Clarkson's EOD ring found in the crime scene. There was a pause of 2 minutes before Corporal Woods started to talk, but Woods could see in Gary's eyes he was starting to panic. Just then, the door to the interrogation room 227 burst open. It was Constable Davies. She was smiling from ear to ear, only glanced at Gary Clarkson for a second, and passed the paper she was given from Declan moments earlier to Corporal Woods and said, "You're going to love this." Corporal Woods opened the folded paper, smiled, and looked up at Gary Clarkson. Woods leaned back in his chair and folded his arms and said, "So, Gary, it seems Kim gave you up. She is ready to testify you murdered Tom Gibson." The room immediately erupted with Gary Clarkson pushing the table, forcing his chair back and standing up. "What? I had nothing to do with this." "Nothing." Corporal Woods picked up the evidence bag holding Gary's ring, stating, "We have your ring, which puts you at the murder. We have your knife, which connects you to the murder weapon. And, if I was a betting man, your DNA will be on the knife once we get it back from the lab. As far as the law is concerned, this is pretty well wrapped up, unless you have something to add." "Well, do you, Gary? Do you?" Gary started to pace back and forth with his hands holding his head, saying in a low, muffled voice, progressively getting louder, "No. No. No. I am not going down for this, okay? Okay? I had nothing to do with this." Corporal Woods looked directly into his eyes and stated, "That's not what the evidence is stating, and we have Kim's statement that she witnessed you plunging the knife into Tom Gibson's chest. Explain that." Corporal Woods was now shouting at Gary, "Explain that, Gary." Gary sat down again, still holding his head in his now shaking hands. "I will tell you the truth. Kim is lying to you. She called me 2 weeks ago after she moved into the tented camp. She told me that she felt unsafe in the camp and wanted to borrow my knife for protection. I was reluctant at first, but she made a good point, so I gave her the knife. Then the night before the murder, she called me and asked if I would meet her in the park by the broccoli tree early the next morning. I thought that was a little strange, but she sounded desperate and insisted that she needed my help. When I arrived there around 7 a.m., parked and walked up the hill, Kim was standing over a body in the field. I ran over and asked what happened. She held out her hand and said she was attacked. She was, holding my knife. I took it from her and threw it to the ground. She immediately ran over to the tree line adjacent to the open field about 50 meters away. I followed her and grabbed her arm, turning her around to face me. She pushed back, and that's when I lost my ring. I asked her, "What's going on, Kim?" She said, "Payback." I let her go, stunned. Just then, two people found the body and started to call for help. She then told me to leave and she would wait for the police and did not want me to get mixed up in this. I am due for promotion. She set this whole thing up. I've been had, son of a... of... Corporal Woods put his hand out and said, "It's okay. It's okay. We believe you. We believe you. Are you willing to put this all down in a statement? That way, we can help you out. If not, well, we can't do anything other than follow the evidence, because right now, that all points to you. Declan's summary. Kim Gibson was charged with murder of Tom Gibson. Tom was constantly trying to swindle her out of money. Her plan was simple. Get Gary's knife and use it to kill Tom, and by using gloves, his fingerprints would be on the murder weapon. Having him at the crime scene placed him at the murder. As for the ring, well, that was just bonus. She went back looking for it to ensure the police had found it and used it to link Gary to the murder. As for motive, that was simple. All she had to do was tell the police that Gary was jealous of Tom and wanted to get back together with her. Case closed.
Thanks for listening and have an outstanding day. Story by Gary A. Crosby, MMMCD. Darkwood Wood Carving, dwcarving.com.